First of all, I would like to thank the North Miami Beach Community Kollel for once again inviting me to speak here. It's a big kavod to be here. And I would like to thank the Reish Kollel. And before, I'd like to thank my good Yedid, Rav Zelig, for inviting me once again to come here. It's always a big honor to be here. Before I discuss tonight's topic, I would just like to share a Dvar Torah with you that I think it ties very nicely into what we're going to be speaking about. And hopefully it'll be a segue into hopefully us remembering when we come to the Shabbos table, we'll be able to share that with our friends and family as well. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Aaron HaKohen that he's now going to be taken, he tells him, I want you to go on Har HaHar, the mountain upon mountains, where there I will take you to Shammah, and you're going to go up to Shemaim. So we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was buried in Arvis Mayav, Miriam was buried in the place that she was, and each one has a special significance. So what is it exactly that the Rebbeinu Shlom wanted specifically that Aaron HaKohen should be buried Behar HaHar, the mountain upon the mountain? So I believe maybe possibly one could say the following. Aaron HaKohen, when the Torah tells us of his demise, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took his neshama, it says that Vayivchu Kol Beis Yisrael, all of Gan's Kol Yisrael, they cried for him. Why? Says Rashi, often already says right there on the spot, the reason why is since he was Redev Shalom, he always brought peace, the point was he always brought peace to everyone, so therefore Vayivchu Kol Beis Yisrael. So possibly another reason for that is that since Aaron HaKohen was a Har HaHar, he himself was a very big mensch, he was somebody who was very great, he was like a mountain. Like the Gemara tells us that the Ovis were called Harim and the Imaris are called Gevais, they're called the valleys. So since he was a mountain, he himself was very big, but his kunz, his trick was, he made people Har HaHar. He made people feel even greater than himself. He was machniah himself and went over to other people, put himself in front of the person and try to explain to them why it would not be bakovedik for them to act the way that they're acting. And when a person sees that a Gadol Yisrael is approaching them, they'll say, listen, if the Gadol Yisrael holds that this is not something to fight over, I won't fight over as well. But it's this idea of bringing yourself, injecting yourself into this whole argument that you're having between each other. When you do that and inject yourself into this thing, it obviously is something that warrants some type of interest, and therefore we should probably stop fighting. Therefore he was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically chose him to be buried, possibly, El Har HaHar, the mountain upon the mountain, because that is what Aaron HaKohen did. And with this, maybe we could tie in very nicely to what we're going to be speaking about. The topic for tonight is the following. Hero or fool? That is the question. Hero or fool? What do I mean? There was a very famous spy by the name of Eli Cohen. Eli Cohen, for those of you that don't know, it was just to give a very brief background on him. Both of his parents were from Arabic countries. One was from, I think, Morocco. The other one was from Iraq or something. And they spoke Arabic fluently at home. He obviously, that was his mother tongue as well. When his family made Aliyah in the 1940s, 1950s, so he was a very quick person, and he had a certain penchant for languages. He was very good at picking up languages very nicely. So what happened was, and he was an excellent actor. So this Eli Cohen, they told him, we want you to go into Syria and become buddy-buddies with all the infrastructure there, and eventually you're going to be our spy across the border. So he accepted the position, and his family, unbeknownst to them, they didn't know. They knew he worked for the army, but they didn't know what he did. And eventually, he rose to the success of being the confidant of the Secretary of Defense in Syria. And what happened was, when the Syrians, they were in charge of the Golan Heights, they were being quite paranoid that the Jews had a secret weapon, or weapons, we do, our tekayach tzvila, and they were very nervous about how the Jews would overcome the Arabs. So what they did was, they're always on the lookout to try to have many methods to deter them from trying to come up to the summit and try to get them away. So once in a while they would shoot at them, they would use sniper fire, once in a while they would throw a few mortars every now and then. But the point was that they were very nervous about the Jews climbing to the Golan Heights and overtaking the mountains. So what happened was, they had one time a meeting, and after the meeting was over, the Secretary of Defense went out, either he went out to relax or he went out for dinner. The point was, is he called his best friend, unbeknownst to him, Eli Cohen. And Eli Cohen was pretending to be an Arab the whole time. He says, I got to speak to you. I don't know what to do. You're a very sharp guy. What should we do? He said, I got a great idea for you. You know what? There's a very high probability there's going to be a war. And if there's going to be a war, the Jewish people are going to probably want to rise up to the Golan Heights, and they're going to try to overtake that. So what we have to do to try to stop them from doing that is, we'll build bunkers all across the Golan Heights, and these bunkers that we're going to build are going to be impenetrable. We're going to use steel, reinforced steel, and no one's going to be able to get past there. They said, well, what are we going to do? The Jews are going to be on the bottom. They're going to hear that there's heavy machinery, and they're going to see us moving. They're going to know exactly where our bunkers are. He said, oh, I've got a great idea for you. We have to block it off with trees. He said, block it off with the trees. I mean, the Syrian area is a very arid region. How are we going to water it? I mean, we can't afford the water and the trees. He said, I got a great idea for you. Let's put eucalyptus trees, which are native to Australia, and those do not require a lot of water. They have a tremendous amount of foliage, so we could cover up. They won't be able to see what we're doing behind all those trees, and that's it. So it worked like a charm. They put the eucalyptus trees. No one was able to see what was going on there, and then when the Six-Day War broke out, the Israeli Air Force was able, b'siyata d'shmaya, of course, they were able to know exactly where to bomb out all of the bunkers, and they didn't know why. Well, the reason why is because what I just told you, the eucalyptus tree is native to Australia, not to Syria. So it was basically to an Israeli Air Force pilot who's flying over the region. He sees certain trees that are native, and it's all eucalyptus, native, eucalyptus. So when they saw that eucalyptus was sort of like a highlighted route as to what was hiding behind there, and they were able to hit, they got 100% of every one of the bunkers they were able to hit, and the Syrians for the life of them did not know. So one evening, Damascus had a blackout, and when the blackout took place, they were able to look on the radio and on the different systems that they had as to where there would be any high radio frequencies emitting. So they saw from the regular military establishments, of course, that was not affected by the blackout, but they saw that from the regular military establishments, the high frequency radios were going, and then they saw in the middle of downtown Damascus, there was a renegade or some frequency that they didn't even notice. And the only reason why they picked it up was because everything else was black and they were able to pick up on that. So they kept the blackout and they were able to trace this high emitting frequency right into Eli Cohen's apartment, where he had behind one of his closets a radio, and they caught him red-handed. They put him on trial, they tortured him, and they killed him and they hung him on a meat hook. And to this day, they have refused to give over his body for Kfuras Yisrael up to this day. So the question is, Eli Cohen, was he a hero or a fool? Or better yet, I'll ask you, you're walking on the street minding your own business, and suddenly you get a tap on the shoulder and you see a guy comes to you and says, you, come here, I have to speak to you. I am Israeli agent, don't tell anyone, you look like perfect Israeli. We tell you, go to Iran, we'll give you, teach you Farsi, 1, 2, 3, change your fingertips, we'll give you passports, we'll send you in, you are the perfect guy that we want to send. Do you have an obligation to do that? Are you supposed to be a hero? Or are you going to be a fool for trying to accept a mission that could most likely end off in your demise? What would a person be, what's a person's obligation? Is he mechuyev to do that? Is he not? Is it a nice thing? I mean, do you want to be a hero or not? Or are you a fool for doing that? A second question, kidney donations. Is a person mechuyev to go under the knife to get his kidney donated to somebody else who is obviously suffering, Rahman al-Islam, going into renal failure? This person needs a transplant, and Baruch Hashem, we have two. And if a person has two, maybe I have an obligation to go onto the knife to help somebody else, a hero or a fool. Question number three, a group of soldiers are together and they're on a mission, and one of the soldiers goes down, and amidst heavy gunfire is going back and forth, your commander radios in and tells you, move out, pull out. Everyone grabs their stuff, they start pulling out, and then they see one of the guys 100 feet down where all the gunfire is being exchanged. One of your friends is down and he can't move. He's pinned down. So if you jump in, the likelihood of you doing like what they show you in non-life, real life, of you miraculously missing all the bullets, going in slow motion and doing all that turnaround move and everything like that, and they miraculously miss you, is most probably not going to happen. You're probably going to get hit down as well, and you're going to go down too. It reminds me of a Far Side cartoon one time that they see a whole bunch of people who are in a saloon, and you see they're huddled around, and they're like, okay, Frank, for the last time, we're going to tell you, if you're going to get hit and you're at the top of the second floor, don't just crumple down. Make it dramatic and fall with your screaming or something, right? So the idea is that, you know, that this is real life. Real life is, you see the bullets whizzing, the guy is down, Do you go in there? Do you have an obligation to be a hero, or are you a fool for going in to try to save such a person? And then the final question, question number four. The Israeli army got a command. Now, I do not know exactly the specifics why this happened, but this is the story that happened. The Air Force was told to go to a quadrant, and we'll assume it's in the upper right-hand side of a certain quadrant. Upper right-hand side, okay? They were told to go there because that is where the enemy is. Turns out they were right about an upper quadrant, but they got the wrong side. Okay? Instead of it being on the right-hand side, instead it was really on the left-hand side where the enemy was. So unbeknownst to them, they had no communications with them. Communication stopped. So there was no way of stopping this plane from carrying out a mission to eliminate all the people that they were going to see on the right-hand quadrant. However, what happened was, the right side, I'm showing towards you, the right side quadrant. The problem was, the enemy is over here, the good guys, actually Israeli Jewish soldiers are on the right side. So the question is the following. A, people who are in central command that understand that this group is now on a mission to eliminate fellow soldiers, how do we stop them? The only way we're going to be able to stop them would probably be to shoot them out of the sky. Because we have no form of communication, how are we going to stop them? So are we obligated to kill the people who are flying there, or somehow put ourselves in a situation to stop them at risk of our own life, that maybe we are going to perish as well? So those are the four questions. Question number one, to be a spy like Eli Cohen, are you hero or fool? Question number two, kidney donations, hero or fool? Question number three, soldiers under fire, hero or fool? Or question number four, you see that the quadrant got messed up, do you inject yourself into this or not? So, like in any good Shiloh, we're going to explore in the Torah what the Torah tells us. The Torah tells us the following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us in Parshas Achrimais, Ushmartem es chukaisai, you should watch my chukam es mishpatai, asher ya'asa esam al-adam, that a person shall do, v'chai bohem, and you shall live by it. Then the Torah tells us in Parshas Kedoshim, Loi samar adam reacha ani Hashem. Don't stand idly by your brother's blood is being shed. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that a very peculiar thing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the anthropomorphically speaking, the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have created the world, with a snap of the fingers, he could have created billions of people. Why did he create Adam HaRishon, and from there was Chava, and then the rest of the world? Why that progression? Start from a whole world. Boom, you have billions of people. Says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, a person was created, Adam Nivra Yechidi, a person was created by themselves. Why? To tell you that every single person is Ki'ilu Ayla Male. They're like an entire world. The same way Adam Rishon was one man, and he represented the entire world, so to every person that's walking up and down in the street, or here in the Beis Medrash, they represent the entire world in its entirety. So that is a very, very serious thing that a person has to understand. So if that's the case, then we have to understand that somebody else's life is on the line. I got to save the world. Now, there's a Yerushalmi in Trumas that tells us the following. The Yerushalmi in Trumas tells us, if there was a group of people who were traveling on the road, and they come to you, and they say, hey Jews, we'd like to have some fun with you. Give us over one of the people who are there, and we'll kill them. We'll kill this person, I'll leave the rest of you alone. If you don't, we will kill every single one of you. Are you mechuyev to give them or not? So says the Yerushalmi in Trumas, the Yerushalmi says that if they zero in on a specific person, Kisheva ben Bechri, like Sheva ben Bechri, and the Mepharshim explain what that means, we'll say in a second, but if they zero in on one person like Sheva ben Bechri, then you can give that person over if they zero in. But if they don't, even if every single person gets killed, which mathematically you think doesn't make any sense. They pick one person. There's 100 people saying that. They say, just give us one person. You're not allowed to give over one, even though 100 people are going to go to their death. Why? He's 1% or even less than 1%. Why are we doing? The answer is, because every person counts. And since you cannot decide which person should get killed, therefore, you cannot hand over. You can't do misiri. You can't hand over a person over to get killed. If they choose, that's their thing. However, it's like Sheva ben Bichri, the Mepharshim say, Sheva ben Bichri, who created a certain atmosphere that he deserved to get, he was Mechuyev Misa, he was married by Malchus, he rebelled against the king, he deserved the death penalty. So somebody like that, where they have a wanted poster of him, and it's a specific person, such a person you could give over. But if they don't zero in on... Right. So they say over here, the Mepharshim says that since they zero in on a person, he's a dead man walking. He's like somebody that's not alive. Because they say, we only want specific you. They ask, how could that be? Here it's a chiyuv misa because they decide that. But they say that since they zero it on it, they, that's the reason, by the way, that's not brought in Shulchan Aruch as well. We're going to see that in a second. Okay? Good question. You can, by the way, you can hawk in. You don't have to be the only brave one to do that, right? My father told me when he was in Telstone, and Rav Shach came. When Rav Shach came to give a shir, so he started giving a shir, and there were 12 bachrim in the shir. And he says one Rambam, he says second Rambam. When he got to the third Rambam, he says, I'm giving a shir to a cemetery. Like, what's going on? How come no one's talking to me in the middle? So Gifta said, no, they're American Bachrim, and they don't want to cover for their shashiva. But the Rav Shach wasn't used to that. But please, feel free to hawk in. That whatever. You know, we got a thick pocket. We move, as you can see. So the idea is that Shevin ben Bichri, he was zeroed in as a person who was a dead man walking. So that such a person goes out. Now the Gemara tells us, the Yerushalmi tells us the following story. It tells us that when a group of people were traveling, and what happened was, they got captured by a band of ruffians. These people obviously were very tough, and they kidnapped a bunch of people. And when that happened, immediately one of the Talmidim ran in and said, the people got captured, what should we do? So Rav Yochanan got up and he said, prepare the ktachrichim. It's all over. We're attending a levaya very soon. Rachman al-Tan. And Reish Lakish got up there. Now, you have to have a little bit of a wacky mind. Reish Lakish got up there, and with the Rambo music playing in the background, he puts on his Tfilin Shel Reish, like that, puts on his Tfilin Shel Yad, like that, and he's ready to go, straightens out his suit, and he says, I'm going in there, either I'm going to kill them, or they're going to kill me. He was going on a suicide mission, and Reish Lakish, obviously, he knew. Kent the Malacha, you know, he knew that from the days of the old, right? So he was going to go back and rescue them. So when he got to them, some reason, it didn't actually pan out that there was going to be a fight to the bitter end. What happened instead was, Reish Lakish was actually able to convince them that they should give them over, and then they said to him, and he convinced them, and the way he was able to convince them, he says, if you come with me, I'll bring you to my brother-in-law, who is the Gadol Adar, and I'll give you a bracha. So, Gavaldik, we'll give you a bracha. Now, when I read this Gemara, it reminded me of the story that Rav Aaron Kotler, when he found out that a few Talmidim of his were captured in Italy, he tried to get them out, and what happened was, the only way he was able to get them out, because he was scared Mussolini's forces were going to do that, they were allies with Hitler, he thought they would get killed, so he decided he was going to go a little unorthodox for an ultra-orthodox rabbi, which is, he decided he was going to go ask the mafia leader in Jersey if he could sort of speak to the cousins back, you know, in the familia back home, right? So he spoke with the mafia boss, and the person who said the story, Rav Aaron never said the story, but the translator who was able to speak in English, he was the one that said the story. It's in the story, Living of Mishas Aaron. So when they came to this huge warehouse, there were guys there with machine guns, of course, pinstripe suits, very nice, very fancy, they all reek like cologne, and he walks into the place, and there's a guy who looks straight out of like the movie The Godfather. He's sitting there, he's like, what can I do for you, Rabbi? Okay, fine, whatever. He says, I need you to help save my students, can you do that? I'll pay you whatever you want. So he looked at me and says, I can tell you're very sincere. I'll get them out and then we'll discuss payment later. Okay? 2 weeks later, Rav Aaron got a telegram. BH, we're safe, leaving Italy. That was it. That was because every letter costs a tremendous amount in telegram. So Rav Aaron knew that, fine, the Bachram eventually made it over. And then Rav Aaron now wanted to go back to the mafioso to tell him, thank you very much, and I'd like to pay you. So when he came back to the mafioso said, I don't want your money, because I know you're a rabbi, you don't have any money. I want your blessing, because I was taught that my mama told me that the Jewish people are special, and whatever God blesses, the God of Abraham, so I want you to bless me as well. So whenever I say this story to people, I say, so what would you tell somebody who's a Ritzach, a Naif, and a Gazlan? What would you say to them? I give you a bracha, you should be gebenched, you should have hatzlocha in everything that you do. Yimala Hashem kol mishal slivcha, dot, 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 right? You know, so what do you tell such a person? I mean, you can't even tell them bracha vatzlocha. You can't even tell them that too, right? Can't even blow him off like that because bracha vatzlocha for his terrible things that he wants to do. What are you going to do for such a person? So Dr. Varen, he tells the person off the bat, he says, I give you a blessing that you should die peacefully in your sleep. Fast forward, in the 1970s, Rav Schneer was learning. Ravon Kala passed away in 1965, I think it was. Or 63, thank you. And he passed away. And what happened was, in the 1970s, a big limousine pulls up in front of BMG, and out come a few guys, big burly guys. They say, "Where's Rabbi Kala?" So a few Bokhram point to Rav Schneer. And Rav Schneer says, "We need to speak to you, Rabbi. Come with us." They put him in the limo, and they bring him to the warehouse, and in the warehouse it's heavily guarded, and there's a guy who's on life support system. He says, "Rabbi Kutler, is that you? Doesn't look, no, you're probably thinking of my father." He's like, "I want to tell you, your father's such a holy man, and his blessing saved me three times." And he said there were the three times. One time was somebody planted a bomb in a restaurant, and he had to go up to leave in the middle, and it went off. Another time somebody tried to shoot him, and it made no sense. The guy shot him point blank, and he missed him. Made no sense. Another time, the guy was about to shoot, and he drew some blanks, or the gun got jammed. But basically, every single time where he should have been a Vadai mace, he did not, and he attributed that completely to Rav Aaron's bracha. So they said back here to the Yerushalmi Trumas, where Shulchan said, "I could take you to the rabbi, to Rabbi Yechanan, he'll give you a bracha." Ooh, we want a bracha, right? Some things don't change. We want a bracha. So says Rabbi Yechanan to them when they came to him, "I give you a bracha that whatever you wanted to do to these people should happen to you." They're like, "Wow, look at what we did. We saved him." And the Yerushalmi says, I can show it to you afterwards if you like, they didn't even get halfway to where they were supposed to get, and they got killed, fulfilling Rabbi Yechanan's bracha, which is, you were planning on killing them. So what you were planning on doing to happen to them should happen to you. But the point is that Reish Lakish was willing to go in and put himself in a safek sakana. How is he allowed to do that? He's being a hero? He's being a fool. Or maybe you should be a hero. That's what you're seeing from Reish Lakish. Now the Gemara tells us in Yerma and Pehei Amud Beis, tells us from Reb Shimon ben Asiya that also, it says, V'sharma b'nei Yisrael sa Shabbos, Klal Yisrael should keep Shabbosais. That why? Says the Gemara, Amrit Torah chilul of Shabbos achas. The Torah tells us, I'd rather you disgrace, defame one Shabbos, kidei sheyishmer Shabbosais harbe, in order for you to keep more Shabbosais. Rabbi Yudah Mishmol says, "Ihavai hasam, if I was there, hava mina dire adifa miditu, adifa miditu, I think myself is better than someone else, because it says v'chayba and v'leishiyomus ben, you should live with Torah and not get killed with it." That's another pasuk. And the Gemara about Metzias Samach Beis, the very famous Gemara Samach Beis Ibn Av tells us, two people are walking in a desert. They have only one jug of water. How do they do it? What do they split? So Ben Peturi said one thing, Rabbi Kiva said another, and then the Rabbi Kiva brought a proof. It says v'chay achicha imach, your friend shall live with you, meaning you got to live together, but you are the primary focus of that. And therefore, says Rabbi Kiva, you should take precedence. There's a fascinating chazanish on that, but we don't have the time for that, where he explains the Hezbar Machlokes between Ben Peturi and Rabbi Kiva. What exactly were they arguing on? Was there a drasha? Was there not a drasha? We can speak about that mitzvah after Meir. But getting back to over here, the Rambam tells us in Hilchos Shmiras, in Hilchos Ritzeach, Shmiras Nefesh, he tells us in Perach Aleph, Halacha, Tesvav, Yudalit, he says that whoever is able to save a person, he doesn't, he transgresses the Torah prohibition of don't stand idly by when your brother's blood is being shed. You have an opportunity to save them, you go and save them. And he brings from the Kesef Mishnah, says the following, the Kosev Agayis Maimin, if a person was ever on this, and he brings the Yerushalmi, that you should, like we saw from the story of Reish Lakish, you got to go in, strengthen yourself up, you're going on a suicide mission, you have a proof to do that. However, he says, V'nira Shatam Emnei Shat, Sala Vadai V'hu Safik, you're going to go in and you're for sure going to save them. He's a suffix if they're going to die. So such a thing, says the Kesef Mishnah, the reason why Reish Lakish was allowed to do that, because Reish Lakish was somebody who knew how to fight, and these people was a suffix if they would know how to fight, therefore he was allowed to go in. That's the possible explanation why that was allowed. So in the case of Reish Lakish, the reason why it wasn't such a foolhardy thing was because he actually knew what he was doing. Now, there's a Mishnah in Makas on Yud Aleph Amud Beis. The Mishnah tells us the following. We all know that there's a concept called a Gael Hadam, somebody who, Rahman al-San, somebody killed by accident. Guy picked up his axe or whatever, he killed somebody by accident, totally not at fault. But we know there's something called a Gael Hadam. The person could, a relative of the person that you killed, Rahman al-San, by accident, could pursue you until you get to an Eir Miklat. Once you get in the Eir Miklat, you're safe. Says the Mishnah the following, and this is very strange, very few Mishnahis do this. The Mishnah tells us like this, if a person is in an Eir Miklat, you made it, you're safe. However, says the Mishnah, Eina Yaitze Misham Lailam, you cannot go out of that Eir Miklat at all. And it says, different cases. Loyleidus mitzvah, not if you have to testify for a mitzvah to help somebody. Veloyleidus moment, and not even to testify for money. Veloyleidus nefashis, even if it's for a capital punishment, someone's going to get killed, and you, by not going there, are going to cause somebody to get killed. Va'afilu Yisrael tzrichim lo, and even if the entire Klal Yisrael, Gantz Klal Yisrael needs you, even if you're so powerful, you're such a general like Yoav ben Tzruya, Eina yaitzit mishom la'ilam. You cannot go out there at all. When I was in Eretz Yisrael a number of years ago, I asked Rav Shmuel Auerbach Shlita about why the Mishnah even says ki Yoav ben Tzruya. You don't find that. Say David HaMelech. Why Yoav ben Tzruya? And why are you even giving an example like that? He said, I thought it was, this is before he was popular and people were running after him. It was just him and me, you know. So I was just asking him, and he said, good kasha, okay? So the point is, it's very unusual that the Mishnah actually says, a case like that, even like Yoav ben Tzruya, why? And it says, the Mishnah, Shenemar anos, asher nos shama, you shall run there, shamtei dirosei, there you shall live, shamtei misasei, there you shall die, shamtei kvurosei, there you shall be buried. You are stuck there forever, ever, ever. Until the Kohen Gadol dies, you are going to be there for the rest of your life. You have no way of going out, no recourse, you're stuck. So, that seems to be that's the Mishnah. Zokta Rambam, in Hilchas Ritzach, Shmiras HaNefesh, Perek Zayin, Halacha Ches, he says, basically, almost come out word for word what the Mishnah tells us, and he says the following, he adds one more thing. Even if you're like Yoav ben Tzruya, don't go out there forever, Ad Maiska Kohen Gadol, until the Kohen Gadol dies. Now here he adds his own words. V'im yotza, if you decide to go out and you get killed, hiter atzmai lemisa, k'may shebi'arnu, you allowed yourself to get killed. You allowed yourself to get killed, and therefore you have no one else to blame except yourself. So I told somebody, the first time I read this wrong, I was like, oh, this is great. If I were, Rahman al-Tzom, was a Goyal Adam, what I would do is, I would hire a whole bunch of people to go right outside the Ir Miklat, fiend death, like there's a whole massacre going on, and you have one guy who's a real sick actor. He goes out there and goes, Charlie, we need you. We know you. You're such a... Please come out and save us. Right now, I'm sitting there waiting by the door, waiting until the guy comes out. The guy's like, he doesn't know what to do. He's got Jewish compassion, right? And he runs out on the door, and then finally I go to him and say, I've been waiting for you. Right? Okay? Peter Atzma Lemisa. That's exactly the point. The Goyal Adam is going to be waiting for you there, so he's allowed to kill you. And you allowed yourself to get killed. So it seems, according to the Rambam, you would not be allowed to go out if there's a possibility you're going to get killed. And says Rav Meir Simcha on that Rambam. And he says, from here you see, you have absolutely no obligation to put yourself in a suffix sakana to save people who are getting massacred right outside. You see them getting killed. And you're the only one. You see the strategic points of how to get knocked this massacre from taking place. And you want to go out there. Says Rav Meir Simcha, from the Rambam we see clearly that if you have an opportunity to stop, but you may get killed, stay away. And he says, an unbelievable idea. Yes, you had a question? No? You're good? Don't be afraid. I don't bite. At least not in public. So the Meshech Chochma tells us that in Parsha Shmais, he says an unbelievable idea. It's Meshech Chochma l'shitasei. So the Meshech Chochma, why in the world did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe Rabbeinu that now that Dasan and Avirim were taken care of, now you could go back? What do you mean? Hatzolas Klal Yisrael is on the line. If they stayed 1 second in Mitzrayim, Memte Shari Tumah, they'd be out. And they were getting abused and getting killed every single second. So because Dasan and Aviram, they lost all their money and they're not in power anymore, now you can go back. So the Meshech Chochma, yeah. Because you have no obligation that even a possibility that a Dasan and Aviram who are going to possibly try to kill you again, and they are going to try to kill you again, you have absolutely no obligation whatsoever to go back, even to save Gantz Klal Yisrael. You have no obligation whatsoever to go back and put yourself in a suffix sakana. Remeir Simcha Lishitase, beautiful. So, and he says, and even if you're going to, I'm sorry? Shamtei Kvarasa, right. But the question is, so why, in the so it's Machlokes Yerushalmi and Bavli, what's going on? So we're going to get to that. Don't worry. Okay? Balt. So, he says, Afilo, you're going to say like the Shitas HaRidvaz, don't bring a riot to me like the Ridvaz. What's the Ridvaz? The Ridvaz has a question like this. As we all can attest to now, as the Muslims are showing us exactly what they're capable of doing, so in Sharia law, they have a rule, which is the hand of the thief shall get cut off. So they're medaktik, like tzedakim, and they read it kipshutai, that you have to cut off the hand. So they do that. When they catch a thief, they cut off his hand. So the story, I think, takes place in Turkey, which at that time was ruled by the Muslims. And what happened was, there was a Jew who stole something, or he was accused of stealing something. And before they had an opportunity to apprehend him, he quickly ran on a boat and sailed course to Tzfas. Now, I think the Ravaz was living in Tzfas at that time. And what happened was, they asked him, they sent the Ravaz the following question. They said, we know that you're harboring a fugitive, and we know he's probably not going to come back to have Sharia law imposed on him. So we just wanted to let you know that we kidnapped a Jew, innocent Jew who didn't do anything wrong. We imprisoned him, and we are planning on executing him unless this person comes back and turns himself in within the next few weeks. Please respond. Otherwise, we're going to assume that he's not coming back and we will execute the other person. So the person came running to the advisor and says, what should I do? If I go back, they're going to chop up my hand, but maybe they're going to come. I mean, am I obligated to put myself in a suffix sakana to save myself? So says the Ravaz, he says, because they are crazy and they have some crazy law that they're going to chop off a person's hand and do something like that, you have to go and put yourself. So you're going to say, what, I'm causing the person's death? You never wanted to do that. When you stole or you ran away, you didn't think you were going to cause another person to get... Oh, so says the Ravaz, and you're telling me, what's the sakana, right? He says, "Ve'ra'isi be'einai, I saw with my own two eyes how one time they wanted to show somebody a lesson how they'll treat people who are against the malchus. And what they did was they gave a kites be'oznov. They took a needle and poked him in his ear, and they put anticoagulant agents around the ear so that way the bleeding would not stop, and the person bled to death by just a little prick." And he says, "If they cut a person and you're severing arteries and major sources of veins in that place," the guy could bleed to death.
But for the hand, it would be okay? If it's only the hand?
Oh, so he says, if it's only the hand, and it's only completely just a local cut, a local amputation over there, and it could be controlled, ulai, you could say, maybe the person could go back, it would be a mitzvah to do that, and it would be definitely lefnim mishur sadin, but you are not mechuyev to do that. That's the Ravaz. So he says, Rameir Simcha, if you're going to tell me like the Ravaz, if you look closely, he says, oh, people will say, oh, you're mechuyev to do it. He says, that's not what he's saying. He's saying, if you have all these controlled conditions, and you know it's just going to be an amputation, that's it, then you'd be allowed to. The Aruch HaShulchan, he passes like this, he says, even though we say there's nothing as Amib Pnei Pekuach Nefesh, and there's a question of you allowing another friend to do that, he says, Tzarechin Ladino, I don't know what to say in such a case. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav says also like that in Hilchos Nizkei Guf V'Nefesh, he says, to bring yourself into Safek Sakana, Yesh Shemim, you do need to do it, and there's Yesh Chalkin, but therefore I say, V'Safek Nefoshes L'Hakil, better safe than sorry. And there's a fascinating discussion. Rav Kook has a whole interesting idea as to why the Rambam, what the Rambam was really talking about. We do not have time for that. But he has a whole discussion where he argues on Rav Meir Simcha about that. So what they say is, with the case of Eli Cohen, are you mechuyev to be a spy or not? Well, we see clearly from Rav Meir Simcha, absolutely not. Stay far away from that. However, Rav Kook and other people say that there are those people that definitely say to put yourself in a safek sakana, to be a hero, to save other people's lives, and you have the capability of doing that, by all means, if you could do it, you're like a Reish Lakish, go right in. If you know you could do it and you have the capability, just like Reish Lakish had the ability and the means to do it, you should do that as well. Parenthetically, they say, even though the Kesem Mishnah was the same author as the Beis Yosef, he does not bring this halacha down l'maisa. He does not say halacha l'maisa what to do. And they say the reason why he did not talk about that was because it was a suffix. He didn't want to pass in like that la halacha because of this reason. He stayed away from there, which is interesting.
Cohen saved lives or he got the help?
Oh, so what they say is, well, you're saying he prevented. Maybe he saved, I don't know. But he definitely was very high up and could have prevented other tragedies from happening. So that is the answer to the first question. It's machlekes. To spy or not, are you hero or fool? Machlekes. Second question, are you mechuyev to give a kidney up or not? A number of years ago, the Israeli papers, they were making fun of one of the Chavrei HaKnesset, I think it was Avram Ravitz, that he has, I think, 19 kids. He had 19 kids. He was nifter a few years ago. But Kanai Nahar, he was a very big Askin, and he had a very large family. And what happened was, he went into renal failure, and his family got into a huge fight. Not about who's getting the money, believe it or not, but they were actually getting into fight over who was able to give their kidneys over to their father and who was willing to go under the knife, and they were making fun of that, like, what a silly fight. They're fighting over such trivialities. And people wrote to the editor, are you kidding me? What a beautiful thing. Kids are fighting over to save their father. They're willing to go under the knife. You know what type of, Rahman son, what type of pain that is to get an nephrectomy? What type of thing that is? So they said, it was unbelievable Kiddush Hashem that when they found there were three matches and there were three siblings where they had to make a girl and there was a whole shaila about that, whatever. But the point of the matter is, are you mechayiv to do that or not? So says Rav Moshe Shtormer Shlita, he says the following, to give your person's kidney, he says, it will be a wonderful thing, lifnei mishur sadin, like we saw from the Ridvaz, that's a wonderful thing. And again, if it's in a controlled environment, and Baruch Hashem says nowadays, to do surgeries is a very easy thing technically, I mean easier than what it used to be, but in a controlled environment, and people Baruch Hashem could live with just one kidney, so that will be a wonderful thing, but a person is not obligated to do that, to put themselves in a suffix takana, to do such a thing. The other question, which is in Rav Avadi Yosef, in Yaakov Yosef, they bring down, Rav Yitzchak Yosef brings down from his father, Rav Avadi Zatal, the same thing as well, that a person is not mechuyev to put himself in a suffix sakana. He says, however, if you do it al yidei roifim mumchem, you do it under expert care, expert doctors who are surgeons, shomer mitzvah lo yadid avara, and a person will be saved. So in the case of a question of a kidney, we see it's a nice thing, but you're not mechuyev. The third question, which is a soldier goes down, are you obligated to save Private Ryan? That's the question. Are you obligated to go in and save the person and pull them out or not? The guy that went down, are you obligated to do that or not? So the question is, if you're putting that, the bullets are whizzing, are you obligated to do that? So Tzitz Eliezer brings down in Chelek Tes in Simen Mem Hei, and in Chelek Yud Beis, Simen Mem Zayin, he brings down the following, and it's unbelievable. He says, if soldiers go in understanding that there's a possibility that if any one of them get hit, everyone's going to abandon them. No one's going to be able to function normally. Everyone has to know it's we're all for one and one for all. We're always there for each other. We got each other's backs. And if chas v'shalom something happens, every soldier knows that everyone's going to come back to that. Otherwise, no one's going to be able to perform properly in the army. And so therefore, says to Eliezer, all these questions you have of suffix, takana, everything, he pushes them away and he says it's not a problem because in the army, there are certain things that you're allowed to do to save more people and the morale will be low. And he, therefore, in a case like that, would be mounted. The final question of where the Israelis, they messed up and they were going into the right quadrant and they were supposed to go to the right quadrant and bomb out all the people who were there who were the enemy. Turns out they're really Jews. It was supposed to be the left quadrant. What do? So they asked this Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, who he quickly rushed to Rabbi Yashiv Zatzal and asked him this question. And Rabbi Yashiv said on the spot, he said like this. He said, the halacha is, if a person is a roidif, somebody who's pursuing you to kill you, you have an obligation to stop them. You, if you see somebody running after another person to try to kill them, you are obligated to stop that person. He said, but that is only if it's kavanose laharig. If they have in mind to kill the person, you could stop them. He says, over here, they're going to go to quadrant right because they think it's enemies. But if they knew that it was Jewish, says Rabbi Yashiv, they would never do that. So therefore, you cannot stop them. But what you can do is you can notify the people who are on the ground. You've got a plane coming at look around 7 o'clock and be on the horizon. Look out on the horizon. You're going to see there's going to be a plane that's coming for you. Try to stop them by any means possible. But if not, you'd be obligated to shoot them down. A person could do self-defense, even if the person has kavana for the right thing. But if they're actually trying to kill you and you see that they're killing you, you could stop them. Somebody else to stop them, that's not so pushy. So again, let's just reiterate very quickly, we have 30 seconds, which is to spy, to be a hero or a fool. Are you obligated to be a spy? We have machlokes between Rav Meir Simcha and Rav Kook and all the people that are going from the Acharim, going all the way up. Are you machlokes to be like a Reish Lakish? Or we say that no, you have to stay there forever. Kidney donation, that's a very nice thing. Shomer mitzvah, that's good to be a hero like that, but you're not obligated. Soldiers under fire, we saw from the Tzitz Eliezer, you are obligated to go in because otherwise it lowers the morale of the soldiers and no one will be able to perform properly. And then the final idea, which is that it's kavanose laharig. If a person wants to kill a person, you, as an outsider, cannot stop that person. However, the people for themselves can practice self-defense. I'd like to again thank the North Miami Mishkel for inviting me. Have a wonderful Shabbos.